You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
It's gonna feel real good, all right?
Most dope.
Everybody, please put a thumb in the air.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. Welcome to Broad Street Hockey Radio. That's right, BSH Radio. My name is Bill Matz. I'm your director of fun and games for the evening. We have a jam-packed show for you today. So much going on in Flyers land, so much to talk about. Let's get right to it and lead things off with Stephalicious D. Steph Driver.
So I wasn't here last week, which you would know because you listened to the show, and I was under the impression that Kelly disparaged Nolan Patrick, so I had to go back and listen, and she didn't. But my favorite part of last week's episode was that Charlie is now in the Nolan Patrick defender camp, so thank you for that. And great show, everybody. I love listening to the show as a fan because it's just so good.
I don't think anyone's, like, against Nolan Patrick. Like, I mean, yeah, there's crazy people online who are against, like, clean air and shit. So, you know, you can find any opinion you want on Twitter if you look long enough. Like, I don't think anyone's against him. I just think the idea of depending on him to be a key contributor on a team that's supposed to compete for a Stanley Cup is foolhardy. If it works out, awesome. We'll all be happy about that.
My biggest thing is just writing him off after one season, which a lot of players miss a season with injury. Like, that happens to a lot of guys in the NHL. More in other sports. But
as you've said,
a lot of guys.
As you've said, they've missed seasons with injuries. Like, okay, torn ACL. We know how long that takes. You get the surgery, you rehab, you're back in 9 to 12 months. Boom, problem solved. This isn't an injury. This is a disorder that we don't know the timetable for.
Which you don't need to. As a fan, you don't need to understand brains. As a fan, you understand ligaments-ish, because you've seen it before. Fans don't need to understand brains to trust the organization and to trust medical professionals.
I think there's an interesting point to be made there in that, you know, while I agree that obviously the fact that it's a brain, you know, it's a brain issue, it's something that, you know, you can't like just open up a guy's brain and see exactly what the problem is and fix it. It's not like you can do, you know, a surgery.
Why the hell
like
not?
You can. But at the same time, it's an interesting point that Steph that you make in that, you know, let's take a step back and say, what if instead of Nolan Patrick having missed the season due to, you know, a migraine disorder, what if it was the first week of training camp last September, and in a freak practice injury, he tore his ACL and missed the season. Like, would people be just as skeptical about how good he is as a player if he would have missed the season for that reason versus now? And I don't think they would be. I think they would be a lot more optimistic about, not about his ability to return, because there's complete reason to wonder, you know, this is a very murky injury or disorder, whatever you want to call it. But I do believe there's a bit too much skepticism about his potential as a player if he does get past this than there should be. And I feel like there's more skepticism because of the murky nature of the injury than there would be if it was just an injury that everyone could see. Like, I think Nolan Patrick, like, yeah, he missed a season and it's like, oh my God, he's going to miss 20 months and that sucks. But like, Steph makes a good point. Like, that can happen if you have a poorly timed injury, and players can come back from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the biggest thing right now is that fans just don't understand it. Fans don't understand. Fans understand a broken femur. They don't understand a brain disorder. They don't get it. So they're just writing him off because they don't want to understand.
Well, I mean, I think people understand that it's not a question with an answer. So they're going to, one, there's a lot of people who are just terrified of getting their hopes up, like, oh no. And two, there were questions before this about his overall potential as a number two overall pick.
Jesus. No, there weren't.
Yes, there were.
I mean, there were.
After watching him for 2 years, you're going to tell me, like, oh yeah, franchise center. Because that's what we thought we were getting on draft day.
He was 18 years old.
There's a lot of 18-year-olds who look better than he did.
I wouldn't say a lot. There are a few.
There's a few every year.
Maybe. But
there were several in his draft class.
Were there?
I would rather have what's his face.
There were like Kale. Two or three, maybe. Not that's more than one, but I wouldn't say several.
One of them was drafted after him.
Yeah, it's basically Makar, Haskinen, and Pedersen. Those are the guys that everybody's going to point to because they were drafted right after him. So like, But that said, none of those guys made the NHL their first season. So it is kind of a different timeline. I mean, they all came up in their second draft season, and they all killed it. I mean, well, actually, Makar came up in his third, but he had that playoff run in his second that had everything.
He had that playoff and then came in, yeah.
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 But, like, even then, like, they have...
We saw Nolan Patrick long before those other teams saw their players from that same draft.
But in their rookie years, were ahead of him in his second and non-existent third.
Which is fair. Yeah.
Well, you can't hold the non-existent third against him. Because he had 0 points this year doesn't mean...
That's not good. You got to get points.
We talked about this at length. It's just, to me, it has more to do just with his development. Now he's another year behind after injuries to start his career.
He just turned 22.
Yes.
Just turned 22. Under a normal timeline, he would just be making the NHL this season. Like, I think that everyone just needs... All I'm asking for is for people to calm down. You don't have to believe in him. You don't have to think that he's the second coming. You don't have to think that he's a franchise center. Just calm down.
Never.
That's it. Just a little bit.
I refuse to be calm.
Like, when Steph Driver is asking you to calm down...
I know, right?
Like, you know, like... You need to look in the mirror and take a look at your life. Look at your life. Look at your choices.
From TheAthletic.com, Charlie O'Connor.
So speaking of players that people are strangely starting to just disregard as impact players, I want to make the point here, because I've seen this a lot over the last like month or so on social media. I want to make the point and reiterate that Travis Konecny is a really good player. And I feel like we're forgetting that he was the team's top scorer and had a massive breakout year in 2019, 2020, just because he wasn't good in the playoffs. Like, we shouldn't just be tossing him in trade proposals because he's really good. Like, I'm not saying that he has to be untouchable. I'm not saying that, you know, if you have a chance to get a superstar, that I'm not convinced Patrick Laine is, but if you can get an actual superstar, would I trade Travis Konecny? Sure. But, like, Travis Konecny is essentially what Travis Konecny is right now is essentially the ceiling of every single forward prospect that the Flyers have. Like, if Morgan Frost becomes Travis Konecny good, that's, like, the best possible outcome for Morgan Frost.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If Tyson Forrester becomes Travis Konecny good, like, we're not expecting any of the forward prospects the Flyers have to be, like, Austin Matthews good. Travis Konecny is the ceiling. So, like, everyone in the... Joel Farabee, Travis Konecny is a ceiling for Joel Farabee. Not, like, the same type of player, but in terms of impact, that's a ceiling. So, like, let's not throw away a guy who is essentially the best we can hope for out of all the kids in the organization.
There's a lot of playoff recency bias amongst this fan base
right
now. Oh,
yes, there is.
Like, everyone has completely forgotten how good everyone looked in the regular season. And I get it. It's been somewhere between 3 months and 75 years. I don't know exactly how long it's been. But still, like... You can reach back a little bit and remember how good everyone was before they shit the bed in the playoffs.
I was going to say, to be fair, like, be fair, the regular season ended 7 fucking months ago. And I think, like, okay, Travis Konecny in a vacuum has a bad playoff. We all go, what are you going to do? I mean, not like that, but we can disregard it and be like, it's one playoff, you know? Given the reputation, deserved or not, of guys like Claude Giroux already, I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying I understand the sentiment of, we got a whole team of regular season players. We got a regular season coach. Like, I understand. I'm not saying I agree. Just saying I understand where people are coming from. And it's going to take playoff success for people to change their opinion on that.
Yeah, I guess, and kind of bringing this back to Konecny, I guess the thing with Konecny was I did get that impression that people were just kind of like, well, that stinks that he had a bad playoff, but, like, it's just one bad playoff. But then you're seeing people talking about trading him. And, like, look, I'm not saying that I think, like, including Travis Konecny in a trade for Patrick Laine is inherently stupid, because Laine maybe has a skill set that the Flyers really need, but... it's objectively true that Travis Konecny is a better hockey player right now than Patrick Laine. He is. Like, yeah. He's mm-hmm. a better... Right now, you can argue that Laine maybe has a higher ceiling, that if Laine becomes the 50-goal scorer on a yearly basis that people think he can be, then he will be better than Travis Konecny. That's fair. And that's why I don't think it's ridiculous to talk about him in a trade. But, like, Konecny's better. He's a better player now. So, like, let's not...
At this
not,
moment, right now, yes.
Yes. So, like, let's not, like... And you want to hear the justification as to why Travis Konecny is a better player right now? Because Winnipeg's willing to trade Patrick Laine. If Patrick Laine was better than Konecny, they would not be willing to trade him. Like, that... The reason why he's being willing to be... They're willing to trade him, in addition to the fact that they're afraid in 3 years he's going to pull Jacob Trouba and bail, is that... he isn't as good as some people think he is. That's why they're considering it, because it's like, well, we're going to have to pay him $10 million. Is he actually a $10 million player? You know, this is why a guy gets put on the market. A guy doesn't get put on the market unless he's, like, flat out demanding a trade, which I don't get the sense Laine is. Like, there's been some talk with his agents being like, it might be better, but I think that's more them just trying to maybe push Winnipeg in the direction of moving him. But, like, he's not at the point where he's going to sit out if he's not going to trade.
No, but I will say, like, floating the idea of $10 million when you're, like, maybe a 30-goal scorer at this point to Winnipeg, a small-market team, that's asking for a trade without asking for a trade.
Yeah, right.
To a point.
Where's this $10 million number coming from? It ain't coming from their front office, so it's coming from his agent. You know, like, he is not worth Travis Konecny is better right now. I think Patrick Laine could be better. But if you're going to ask me, like, Konecny for what he's signed for or Laine $10 million, yeah, I'd rather have fucking Konecny.
I am so sick of this fan base. I'm very, very sorry to every single one of our listeners.
Well, I can't wait to get into Toronto then.
Yes. Love Maple Leafs.
I'm so sick of this what have you done for me lately fan base.
I mean, it's, like, not even lately, though, Steph. It's fucking 10. It'll be 11 seasons since their last Stanley Cup final appearance.
Like, I'm talking just about Travis Konecny.
People are rightfully, like, excited to move past, oh, wow, we won a round. What a day. Like,
listen, fine. But the answer to that is not by trading Travis Konechny. I'm going back to Charlie's original point because I was eating pretzels and I was muted.
Also,
Charlie's original point about Travis Konechny.
Bear was barking, so you couldn't talk.
Bear was also barking. It was a whole thing. I'm going back to the original point. Travis Konechny is amazing, and he was born to be a Flyer. And if you're trying to trade him, please, once again, look at your life, look at your choices.
And, like, as Charlie said, if Patrick Laine was so... We say all the time, like, people don't want a goal scorer. People want Alex Ovechkin. Those players aren't available. If Winnipeg thought he was that guy, he would not be available. Yep. Last but not least, we are still on intros. Kelly Hinkle.
I was going to actually talk about how I read a thing about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler getting to choose their own line mates in Winnipeg, and apparently they don't want to play with Line A, which I find is interesting. At least that was the suggestion.
He smells bad.
Maybe. But I don't want to talk about that anymore. I want to talk
about
how
obsessed...
There's no
way he smells bad.
He might. He's got weird hair. He had that beard that one time. He might smell...
Oh, God, that awful beard.
Oh, that Amish beard?
Yeah.
It was awful.
Anyway, I'm obsessed with Tyson Forster being a sheep farmer. It's my new obsession.
I saw that article.
Hold on. Is he a sheep farmer? Tell me everything.
He's a sheep farmer. Sammy J put out an article today about how he used to work on his family's sheep farm and he like learned lessons or something from doing this. But it's like so stereotypically like Canadian hockey player, like stupid Ontario farm boy. Like I'm obsessed with it. It's wonderful.
I kind of love it. Like,
me too.
Brock Lesnar grew up on a dairy farm and, like, is just the fucking beast incarnate. Like, I hope that's what Tyson Forster is, too.
I just imagine that they're all, like, dairy on Letterkenny.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Up there with their barn clothes on.
Yeah, like, Tyson Forster absolutely goes to the bar in his barn clothes.
For sure.
Well, Travis Sanheim is back on his family's farm driving the combine. Like, that's what he's doing in the offseason.
It's wonderful.
Does anyone remember? I mean, only Charlie will remember this. Roy Oswalt hurt his back doing something with, like, a forklift after, like, a natural disaster in his hometown, and he was, like, never the same.
I do remember that. Man, injuries are weird. Remember the time that, what was it, Ryan Madsen blew a save and then kicked a chair and broke his toe?
Broke his toe or something? That was great. Oh, baseball. Okay, let's get to the hockey, though. So we have a little bit of Flyers news here to get to off the top. First and foremost, the aforementioned Nolan Patrick accepts his qualifying offer. It turned out, like, he didn't really have any options. Obviously, no arbitration. He hasn't played enough games in his career for an offer sheet. Not like anyone would be like, oh, gotta go get Nolan Patrick. But I would wonder if someone was like, hey, here's $2.5 million, Nolan Patrick, would the Flyers have matched? But that's neither here nor there. He missed the whole year, so it's not like he has a negotiating leg to stand on. This was just what was going to happen. He would accept his qualifying offer and hopefully be ready to go, be the 3C, put up a bunch of points, and we're all happy next year when he gets a multi-year deal.
I'm actually surprised that he signed his qualifying offer because he has played a lot of games in the NHL. Like, when you sign your entry-level contract, you haven't played any games. He's played a lot of games, and he's scored over 60 points, proving that he's an NHL talent. I'm surprised that his agent didn't push for at least $1 million.
But there's a possibility he doesn't play at all. Like, I don't know how
Then the Flyers don't have to pay him. That's easy. Then the contract means nothing if he doesn't play.
Well, no, they still
They still have to pay him.
Yeah, as long as he shows up. Like the only way they get out of paying the contract is if it's a Niskanen situation where Niskanen is technically still under contract. He just doesn't show up, and then they can suspend him without pay. I highly doubt Patrick would just not show up. It's interesting. I'm kind of with you, Steph, in that I thought he was going to get more than just the qualifying offer. I thought that the team, you know, maybe it was going to be a 2-year deal. Maybe it was going to be a 1-year deal with a little bit more. But I guess, he just didn't have any leverage, you know, no arbitration, no offer sheet. I know teams don't like, I know offer sheets never happen. But I guess, like, the possibility that in theory they could, it at least gives an agent some type of leverage at the bargaining table, because the player could be like, well, you know, if you keep lowballing me, I'll just find a team and sign an offer sheet for $1.2 million, and there you go. So I guess the Flyers just kind of told them, like, look, you know, we're just going to treat this as if it's the fourth year of an entry-level deal, so deal with it.
And this is, again, like, he wasn't eligible for the offer sheet, and teams don't do him, but I always think, like, it's under-weaponized for mid-level players.
Oh, I
like,
agree. Those, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like, no one's get, like, fucking Nashville, that's what I'm trying to think. Like, Nashville isn't going to part with Shea Weber, you know? They'll overpay, and it wasn't even an overpay, it's just a ridiculous contract in the long term. They will overpay for Shea Weber. Like, someone will overpay for their superstar. When you get into, like, a flat cap situation like this, and someone goes, hey, like the Ryan Kessler offer sheet that that Clark tried to get, tried to get, like, hey, here's a guy who hasn't broken out yet, here's a little bit more than he's worth, let's see if the team's interested. And, like, ultimately they were, we didn't get him, but, like, something like that I think is, like, a good use of the offer sheet that never happens.
Well, my favorite, my favorite use of the offer sheet, and, like, this is the one thing I don't understand why it doesn't happen more often. Because, like, look, I get to a point the concept of, like, well, you don't want to piss off other GMs because, you know, I wouldn't say it's an old boys club, but it's like, you know, if you screw over somebody, then, like, you're going to get, you know, maybe they're going to get back at you. Maybe teams won't work with you. But, like, my favorite use of an offer sheet was the San Jose Chicago thing when they offer sheeted. This was, like, right in the height of their rivalry. So, like, those two teams are both really good in the West. They played each other in the playoffs. They weren't going to make trades with each other anyway. And San Jose offer sheets Chalmerson for probably more than he was going to get. Chicago matches it. And then because they match it, they could no longer afford to pay Antti Niemi, who then becomes a free agent, who San Jose then signs to be their goalie. Like, that to me was, like, that was the perfect usage of the mid-tier offer sheet. And that's the kind of shit, like, Pittsburgh's not going to do a trade with the Flyers anyway. If Pittsburgh ever has a useful, you know, unrestricted free agent that could be offer sheeted, fucking offer sheet them. They're not going to trade with you anyway. Who cares? You hate each other.
I think it's the Flyers and Devils have never made a trade, I believe.
Yeah, offer sheet the hell out of the Devils. I don't care.
Yeah.
Remember when the Flyers had to trade Mark Streit to Tampa Bay just for him to go to Pittsburgh?
Yes.
And hey, they got an extra seven out of it, you know?
They did.
All right, so, like, basically the Flyers, they have pretty much everybody under contract, 12 NHL forwards, including Nolan Patrick, both goalies, 6 D-men, but we're waiting on Phil. When does Phil Myers get done? Obviously, it's a little more complicated. I'm not saying contentious, but just complicated with moving pieces like flat cap, potential. He's going to be used as a top four defenseman. Is he really yet? Like, when do we think this gets sorted?
I know it's going to happen, but every day that it goes on, I get worried about it.
They're working on it.
Worried about it. I know.
I mean, it'll get worked out. I assume. And this is just a guess. I there are some negotiations I have inside info on. This one I do not. But my guess is that they're probably trying to hammer out some type of longer-ish deal. Because if they were just going to do a 2-year deal, there are so many easy comparables that you would think it would get done very quickly. And the fact that it's not done yet, and the fact that the two sides have been talking, which Fletcher confirmed last week, that leads me to believe that they're trying to come up with, like, you know, a 3-4-5 year term that makes sense, because there aren't a lot of comps in those term ranges. So it's a harder negotiation because there just aren't a lot of players you can look to. So you sort of just have to hammer it out. You know, I guess can't do it at the table anymore. You got to do it over, you know, over Zoom or over the phone. But the fact that it hasn't happened yet, and the fact that now the Flyers have some cap space to do it, I feel like my guess, and again, this is just a guess, is that both sides probably know they can always fall back on the 2-year deal if they have to. but they're trying to work out a longer term deal, see if they can pull it together. And if they can't, you know, and if it drags out through the winter, then they could always just fall back on the easy 2-year deal that's cheap and just do a bridge deal. But my guess is they're probably trying to see if they can make a longer thing work, which is good because, I mean, I think the Flyers could benefit from a longer term deal with Phil Myers if they can pull it off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talked last offseason about how Sanheim not getting the longer term deal could ultimately, you know, be a detriment to the Flyers cap situation. Like, if he breaks out in a contract year, obviously, you know, you have a good player, pay him, cool, you have a good player under contract, but if you get him on a prove-all-of length deal for under what you think he's going to be worth, that's ultimately beneficial. So the Leafs, Caps, Ducks, Golden Knights, Blues, and Coyotes are all currently over the salary cap. Flyers are like $4.8 million under the cap. Obviously, they still have to get Phil Myers done. Is there any way to take advantage of this situation? Anyone on those teams you think we could poach because of their problems? Just any thoughts?
Do they want a Jacob Chychrun?
I don't think they want to trade a Jacob Chychrun.
I want a Jacob Chychrun.
I think the Coyotes are fine because, number one, even though they are technically over the cap, like, they're actually not paying the players nearly as much as they have in cap space. Like,
a lot of backloaded contracts.
Yeah, they're paying them like $20 million less, like fewer dollars than they actually have for cap space. And then secondly, they can always just put Marian Hossa, who they still technically have him on their books. They can always put him on long-term IR because he obviously can't play. So I think the Coyotes are fine. As for the other teams, I think it just comes down to fit. You know, yeah, these teams are over the cap, but, like, who are the Flyers going to poach that fits? And I think we're going to get into this a little bit later with what Chuck Fletcher said, but it's like, okay, they don't really need another winger. They need another defenseman, yes, but it has to be a very specific type of defenseman, you know, the kind of defenseman that can replace Matt Niskanen. So I don't know if any of those teams have a guy like that who they're willing to trade. So that basically just leaves center. You know, do any of those teams have, like, a useful, cheapish center who can be there in case Nolan Patrick isn't ready and in case Morgan Frost isn't ready? And I haven't looked into that, but to me, that's really the only fit because I don't know if any of the other positions really fit, if that makes sense.
The Blues have this player. His brother just won a cup. His name's Braden Sheen.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
Is my cat named after him?
That's all I was thinking last night. I was like, how fucking funny would that be? But obviously, probably not going to happen.
One guy on the Blues who's mildly interesting is Tyler Bozak, but, like, I just don't think that works financially unless, like, the Blues, like, retained half his salary. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's some options and there's some cap space there, but the big thing is that the Flyers probably want to keep some cap space open if they are indeed trying to sign Phil Myers long-term, because if you sign Phil Myers short-term, you have cap space. If you sign him long-term, that eats into it, but the thought is that, yeah, you might have less cap space this year, but you're going to make it back in the savings in 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
I'll tell you, man. That Andrew McDonald buyout at almost $2 million this year, that's a real pain in the dick.
It's not great.
Like, I'm glad he's gone and it's worth whatever. Just not having to watch him. Exactly. If they don't have $1.92 million, that's not my problem. Ain't my money. But, like, goddamn, that'd be a useful $2 million.
Who could have predicted a flat cap because of a global pandemic?
You took the words right out of my mouth, though. I would deal with a $5 million cap hole, not to have to watch Andrew McDonald play hockey anymore.
I would contribute to a GoFundMe if that's what it came down to. All right. So Fletcher's Friday presser. I honestly saw these quotes and thought we already talked about it, but apparently it was something different. So we're going to get into that a little and about what the general manager of the team had to say about some things. And first and foremost, it's like what we spent half of last show talking about, Ghost and the other Eric Gustafson. Can they play in the same lineup? Some pretty interesting quotes, and, like, obviously, what else is Fletcher going to say? Like, oh no, this is untenable. We absolutely have to move Eric Gustafson. Other GMs, I'm desperate. please bail me out. Like, no, I don't think he's going to say that. But he answers the question, absolutely. They're both real good players. I'm not sure stylistically they are as similar as you may think. Gus just got tremendous deception and vision. I think he generates offense a little bit differently than Ghost. Ghost probably has got the best shot of anybody on our team. That's interesting considering he hasn't hit the net in, say, 2 years. But nobody did in the playoffs, so what are you going to do about that, I guess? Can they play in the same lineup?
Of course they can. They can. Should they? I don't know.
that's exactly right, Kelly.
They definitely can.
So the argument I'll make against this is that, like, I understand where Fletcher's coming from, and I do agree that it's not like Eric Gustafson and Shane Gospier are clones. They're not, you know, and Fletcher hinted at this, that Gustafson's actually a really good passer. That's where he generates a lot of his offensive value. He's got great vision. He sees the ice extremely well, and he sets up his teammates, you know, on stretch passes, passes in the offensive zone, activating to set up guys in high danger areas. Like, that's where he's good, whereas Ghost is basically just like a mad bomber. I mean, he has that slap shot, the Ghost bomb, everybody knows it. So it's not that they're the same player. It's that they kind of have to be used in the same role in terms of usage. And that's the concern, is that they're both guys who ideally are sheltered, offensively oriented guys on your third pair that maybe if they have bounce back years and they show that they are two-way threats again, then you can move them up the lineup. And the question is that how do you get either one of them to that point if they both need to be in the same spot to begin with? And that, to me, is the concern. It's not that they're the same player. They're not. I just don't know. Because if you're going to have both of them in the same lineup, you have to do one of two things. You either, A, have to put them on the same pair on the third pair, which
I just
don't see an NHL coach doing. Like, I guess it's possible. I just don't see an NHL coach doing it. Or
No. You
have to basically tell one of Shane Gospier or Eric Gustafson, both of whom did not have good seasons last year, that you are going to be in the top four and you're going to get the assignments that go with being in the top four. And I don't know if an NHL coach is going to be willing to do that, considering how underwhelming both were last season. Now, maybe, you know, maybe you say, okay, we signed Gustafson, it's a fresh start, we're going to put you on the second pair. Maybe they do that. But I'm just skeptical. I don't know. Maybe it happens, but I'm just skeptical. I'm skeptical of the fit, not because they're the same player, but because they seem to fit in the same spot.
I love this quote, though. I think they're a little bit different talking about Gustafson and Ghost. They are both better offensively than defensively, probably. Not probably. but I think both of them actually defend pretty well. Why not? I think Provorov's elite defensively. Sanheim and Myers, in my opinion, will become elite shutdown defensemen in this league. Justin Braun is an elite defender. Haig is a good defender. So why not have a couple of guys that can spring your offense? If we can defend less, that would be a great thing. Chuck, you're talking my language.
Can I just real quick, even Chuck Fletcher is like, elite defenseman, elite defenseman, elite defenseman. Hang's good.
He's fine. There's been a couple times, I don't think, it wasn't in this one, but there's been a couple times where, like, Chuck will be he'll be talking about, like, players and be praising them, and then he'll end it with, like, and so-and-so is a player. And I love that. I love, like, and, you know, he plays hockey. I mean, he does. He's on the ice. He does things. Come on, guys.
Amazing.
We don't have personalized sticks for him. There's just a bin of the extras, and he gets those, but
I just feel
he
like
gets Claude Giroux's broken.
I feel like the he's a player is like hockey speak for he sucks, but I can't say he sucks.
Oh, that's amazing.
Can you start keeping track of who's a player?
I will. I will keep track, like, of this.
Just for this show, it doesn't have to be published, but I need to know who's just a player.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So one thing I did find interesting about that quote, Bill, I agree. I like the if we can defend less, that would be a great thing mentality. I'm really, really high on Travis Sanheim. I do not think he's going to be an elite shutdown defenseman.
Yeah, he's not really a shutdown. He's not a defensive defenseman.
Like, Myers, I can see. I can, like, at least envision it. Sanheim, not sure, Chuck.
the fact that he put them together and said, will become, I think he just meant, like, and, like, you know, he's trying to build up his guys and he's trying to make a point. He's trying to make a point about two other players who definitely aren't this thing. But it's like they'll become an elite pair. And if they always have the puck, well, then they're a shutdown pair. Like, you know,
that's fair.
The other team only has the puck 40% of the time. Guess what? They're shutting them down unless, like, Briz comes back and then, you know, every shot goes in. But I see where he's coming from, but I did find that funny, too. Like, I don't know about elite shutdown, but whatever. Okay, if we can defend less, that would be a great thing. Love that quote. You're gonna start the season with Hague and Braun on your third pair who do nothing but be on defense. Like, unless something changes, they're gonna be out there together. Meh.
I mean, I'm sure that he knows in his soul that that's not ideal, but it is what it is right now. So, you know, if I guess we're going to have to be on defense sometimes.
Sometimes.
Allegedly.
And you hope that it's, you know, against the other team's bad players. It's the best you can hope for, really.
That's, well, get on it, AV. So, much like there may not be a perfect fit on defense, and they're going to have to sort this thing out. Maybe Braun moves into the top four. Who the hell knows? That's probably what it's going to be to start, at least. They didn't target a winger because basically they're all set at wing. They're full. They're full of wingers. And as I just said earlier, like, they do have 12 NHL forwards under contract with Nolan Patrick. It's not like they can just go out and sign some depth pieces. Do we agree they're fine on wing, though? They have Giroux, Jake, Konechny, Lindblom, JVR, and Farabee. If you're keeping track, that's six guys. That's your top nine of wings. Are they all good there?
Yes.
Wasn't it Charlie last week that said when the Flyers hear that people want them to get a top six winger, they wonder if fans can count?
Yes, that was Charlie.
Yeah. No, and Fletcher just echoed it. Like, that's the thing that people in the Flyers organization, like, you talk to people in the Flyers organization and they acknowledge we need another defenseman. Like, we need a Niskanen replacement long term. They acknowledge that the Patrick situation is nebulous. They acknowledge that Frost might not be ready and that adds questions. But they look at it like, why do you guys want a wing so bad? Like, our wings are fine. Like, not that they couldn't be better, but they're fine. And I mean, you read off those names and, like, yeah, that's, you have basically what, like, three wings that are undoubtedly first line quality in Giroux, Voracek, Konechny. You have one guy in Lindblom who was trending to be like that before out of nowhere he got fucking cancer. And then you have a guy like JVR who, like, yeah, he's not a guy you want necessarily on your top line, but when he's having a good season, he produces like a top liner. And then you got Joel Farabee, who's a really good prospect, who's already a decent NHLer. Like, yeah, those are good top nine wings.
So, Charlie asked the question in the outline, this doesn't close the door on line A because presumably he would be an upgrade on what they have, right? And, like, I think the thought is there, a Konechny would go in a line A trade. So, like, that's swapping one out for the other. You're still at, you know, your six wingers. But thinking about JVR, yes, he gets paid a ton of money. And yes, in a good season, especially with power play production, he's producing like a top six forward. But, like, I don't know. Wouldn't Mike Hoffman make this team better?
I don't want Mike Hoffman and his locker room cancer anywhere near this team.
Yeah, there's a reason why he's so available. Because he's quite good at hockey. But life
is
bad.
Like, this team and this locker room, like, they're a close group of guys. I don't want whatever baggage he's bringing near my babies.
I'm just going to stand back on that. Like, that whole situation was just so weird. That,
it,
like,
was very weird.
I mean, look, I'm not here to say that, you know, that this is definitely what happened. All I'm here to say is that, like, I don't know if that's going to happen again. So,
yeah.
Like, that strikes me of, like, look, there might have been really terrible things done in that situation. It's very possible. I just don't think it's something that's going to replicate in other locker rooms. So I'm not terribly concerned about it. My thing is, I just don't think Mike Hoffman, at least the Mike Hoffman that's been playing down in Florida the last few years, is actually an upgrade over any of the guys they already have in their top nine, except maybe Joel Farabee, except we're expecting Joel Farabee to get better, which is why you have to play him so he gets better. You can't just park him in the minors and be like, good luck, kid. You have to actually give him minutes in scoring situations for him to become a scorer. Like Mike Hoffman, the only thing Mike Hoffman brings is that he shoots the puck a lot and he's a sniper, and stylistically he brings something. But in terms of overall game, I mean, he is, at least he was in Florida, he's trash defensively. And like, yeah, I mean, if you could maybe
defend less,
maybe in an ideal world, you know, if we're talking about the most forward thinking type of team, you say, all right, well, we're going to put you on your on our fourth line and then you're going to play top power play minutes. But in all honesty, like, I like the Flyers' fourth line.
We already have one JVR.
Yeah, like, I like a Michael Roffel, Scott Laughton, Nick Aubé-Kubel fourth line. I don't know if I want to screw that up by putting Mike Hoffman, a guy who just doesn't give a shit about playing defense, on that line. So, look, I understand you look at Mike Hoffman and you say that, well, he scores, get a scorer. But then I look at the guys they already have, and it's like, yeah, I don't really know if he actually fits. And, you know, if you could get him on a one-year, $1 million contract, I'd take him in a second. But if I have to pay, even if I have to give him a $4 million contract over 1 year, like, I don't know if it's really worth it.
All right, one more, and then we're going to pause for a break, just because I thought that this, this was just a sensical quote from a man who lives in reality, and Chuck Fletcher, like, asked why they didn't spend a ton of money. Like, yeah, asked why they didn't go out and, like, go big game hunting in free agency. He says, if you go back to last summer, we signed Kevin Hayes. If you go back to the summer before that, we signed JVR. I think as an organization, there's only so many multi-year contracts you can either acquire via trade or sign in free agency with average annual values of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million. There's just a limit, especially in the flat cap era. Yeah, I mean, maybe he's being a coward, but it's kind of just true.
No.
The most important point that I need every single listener to take away from this entire podcast is it was not Bill who wrote those words.
No. No, this was Charlie.
It was not Bill.
Charlie wrote, is this a fair point or is Fletcher just being a coward?
I know what stirs up Bill. I know what stirs up Bill, and I knew that would do it. I got to get Bill on a run so we can make good content for you, gang.
I had 2 pumpkin cream cold brews with 3 shots of espresso each.
Oh, my
I'm fired
lord.
Up.
Yikes.
Yeah. I don't know how I'm alive sometimes.
In all seriousness, though, it's a completely fair point. And, you know, I think maybe we forget that both those guys, even though we really shouldn't, considering everyone's complaining about James Rimesay's contract all the time, but we forget that those guys were big ticket free agents because they weren't the biggest ticket free agent. Like, it would be a different story if they would have went out and they would have got Panarin, because then it would have been like, oh yeah, they got the big guy. Whereas with Hayes, even though he's so far worked out great, and JVR, it was kind of like they got like a name on the second tier. And that doesn't feel like enough to a lot of people, which is why you look back and you're like, oh yeah, they did give out $35 million and then $50 million in consecutive seasons to big name free agents. Like, yeah, I guess maybe it's okay that this offseason they're not doing that. But that's probably why, is that the Flyers have not gotten someone where it feels to fans who like the flashy signing, it doesn't feel like they won when they got Kevin Hayes or when they got James Van Riemsdyk. It wasn't like, holy shit, this great player picked us. It was, well, we got, like, he's not Matt Duchene. He's okay. And it's like JVR, it's like,
yeah,
well,
he's better
he's
than
not...
Matt Duchene, turns out.
Yeah, it's like, and with JVR, it was like, well, he's not John Tavares. So, like, but, like, that was, I think, that's what I think drives this, is this feeling that, like, the Flyers haven't gotten that big win in free agency or via trade, and that's what I think drives a lot of that, you know, that feeling. That's why
they need one pajama boy.
I mean, you would just think that if you were a person that was so pissed off about the Kevin Hayes signing, the money, the length of the contract, the fact that he wasn't the number one guy on the list, and now you love him, perhaps learn a lesson.
and like
one time.
And then like look at Nashville and Matt Duchesne and right. be like, oh yes, it doesn't always work out. You know? I'd much rather have Kevin Hayes. I'd much rather have Kevin Hayes at 7. Him. Yeah. Like then Duchesne at 8.5, and I was on the Duchesne train. All right, what we're going to do is take a little break here, and then we're going to talk about those awesome knockoff jerseys we saw. So we'll be back on the other side. Just give us a second.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we'll break down... We break down who will be cutting... Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smart Food, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. I hope you patronize that product and or service that was just advertised. I use it and love it or am subscribed to it. It is wonderful. It has enriched my life. To the umpteenth degree. I hope everybody saw the leaked, I guess they're calling them reverse retro jerseys. There's a story on BroadStreetHockey.com. You can see the picture of them. I tweeted and it got a little bit of run. My Twitter, like, for as popular as this show is, nobody cares about what I tweet. If I get 12 likes, I am so happy. But I said, this looks like something you would pick up at Sports Authority to play street hockey in. I love it. I think some other people have some other opinions. What did we think about these leaks?
I called it a Foreman Mills ass jersey. So
there you go.
That's my thoughts.
That's good.
It looks like we're not officially allowed to use an actual Flyers jersey. This is a close enough approximation that people will buy it for $20.
No, like, this is something I feel like if you showed up to, like, fifth grade in this jersey, someone would have been like, yo, that's fake, you asshole!
Uh-huh.
Like, you'd get made fun of for wearing it. But that kind of makes me like it now.
Oh, I mean...
Hold on, I haven't actually seen this jersey, even though it's on the website.
Oh, read BroadStreetHockey.com, Stephanie!
I know.
That's what you always say to me.
When I first looked at it, it didn't even clue into me that they just took the white parts and the black parts and reversed them. Because looking at it, that doesn't seem clear to me that that's what they did, but that is what they did. And somehow that made it worse.
I like it. I just think it's different. It's different. Like, I don't know. It's not good. I wouldn't call it bad. It just is. Like, what do you want? It's a Flyers jersey.
I just want a third jersey that I personally am insisting on having, which is the 90s black. I don't know why I can't just have it. Other people want it too.
There's like three other people that want
it,
and they're
several.
All our friends.
And they never shut up about it.
Yeah.
And they're all your friends, and
have any
nobody
friends?
Ever stops talking about
Squeaky
it.
Squeaky wheel gets the oil, Kelly. Keep going.
All I want is for the 2012 Winter Classic jersey to be the forever third jersey. That's it.
Yeah, they were good. I like them.
That's it.
Yeah.
They're good. They're amazing. Keep it.
I think this jersey is fine. Like, I was shocked it inspired so much hate. Because it's just like, okay, I mean, it's kind of a cool idea. You're
it's Twitter,
the
Charlie.
Black and the white, and it's fine, like, whatever. And I guess I was talking to a couple friends about this off Twitter that, like, I am just so exhausted by jersey discourse when it comes to really all Philadelphia teams, but especially the Flyers, because it just goes the same way. Something gets released, we all fucking hate it. And then within 2 or 3 months, it's like, well, it's not that bad. And then after like a year after we stop using it, it's, well, I actually like that one. Like, it's the initial thought is always to hate the new jersey because it's not what we wanted, which was we just want the old jerseys back that we liked. Like, that in my mind is why this is where all this hate stems from, is that like nothing is going to be good because it's not the 90s orange, or it's not the late 90s, early 2000s black. Like, everyone just has their it's like the Eagles with Kelly Green. Like, the Eagles would do anything to their jerseys and it would suck because we just want the Kelly Green. And I think it's the same thing.
We want the color of losers back. Kelly Green, baby.
It is the color of losers. Can confirm.
Oh, your name's Kelly.
Ooh, cell phone. Can always appreciate a good cell phone.
The best kind of own.
NNST. God damn it. I forget what my point was going to be about these jerseys. Oh, Charlie,
they've got very orange pit stains.
They do.
I think the one jersey that nobody ever came around on was the 50th anniversary with the gold lining.
Oh, yeah, they were bad. They were
those
bad.
Are hideous.
I mean, for a reason, they're terrible.
Hideous. Those are objectively bad. All the other ones they've put out I've liked, like the pumpkin ones that they wore in the outdoor game. I dug those. I love the big numbers on the black ones. I think those are fine. Is this worse than the Quakers jersey? Because I love the Quakers jersey and still want one, even though it was fake.
Oh, the
no, it's not worse.
Yeah, that was really bad. That was bad. So my two rules for Flyers jerseys, and I think generally speaking, everyone can agree with the first. I think it's the second one that's a deal breaker for some people, obviously, because some crazy people think those black jerseys were good. The first rule is that don't fuck with the logo. Like, all of the really bad Flyers jerseys, you fucked with the logo. You fucked with the logo with those awful 3D ones in the early 2000s.
Ugh. Terrible. Ugh.
You fucked
with
the logo.
Those are bad too.
Yeah, you fucked with the logo with the 50th anniversary. You put gold in it. Like, just don't. The Flyers logo is perfect. Don't mess with it. That's number one. Number two, and this is my thing, the Flyers color is orange. So every jersey the Flyers have, you have to highlight the orange. And if you ever don't highlight the orange, it's a bad jersey. That's why I hate the black jerseys, because they're boring. All you have is the orange trim. That's it. You might as well be the 90s Dallas Stars. Like, you're boring. So to me, those are my two rules. And if you don't break those two rules, I'm generally cool with the jersey. And this jersey doesn't break those two rules, so I'm fine with it.
I wish they would bring back the correct orange. That would make me hate things less, I think.
Oh, yeah. You're one of the people who thinks that the current orange is too light, right?
Yeah. It's not the right orange.
I like this neon just because it is so fucking bright and ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's what I like. I like stupid shit.
Like, when I saw a picture of this reverse jersey up against the one that was reversed, like, the difference in the orange, the old one is so much better. It's like a richer color. I don't know why they changed it. It's very annoying.
They did. I wonder why they did that. I should ask some people in the organization why that happened. Because it is weird that, like, you do this reverse jersey, which is very clearly meant to be a reverse, so why don't you use the exact same color orange? Like, why do they move away from the slightly darker shade of orange or this brighter one? There's got to be a reason. I would guess it's a marketing reason, maybe. Maybe they think the lighter orange pops more on television or something, but it is weird because they had that darker orange for years and years, and then, like, sometime around the 2010s, they just flipped it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, when they put out those orange ones, they were still wearing black. Their home jerseys now, like, they were still wearing those, the Reebok black jerseys.
Yeah,
and then in the playoffs, NBC was like, yo, wear your orange. And then they went to the cup, and it just became their jersey. The alternates they wore, or the aways they wore at the 2010 Winter Classic were great. But I agree with Steph. I think their all-time best third jersey is the 2012 Winter Classic.
Thank you. I agree with Steph. Yeah. Just end the podcast now. That's what Bill Matz just said.
It's their only lace-up jersey, and, like, lace-ups are usually throwbacks, and since they didn't wear laces, it's their only opportunity to, like, do it. And, it's pure orange, like Charlie says. It highlights the orange. The numbers are cool. Like, the nameplate is cool. The crest for the for like the C's and the A is the turnpike thing or
yeah,
the that, shield, whatever the fuck they call it.
Love that.
Yeah, like it's like I bought a Wayne Simmons one. One, because I love Simmons, and two, like I wanted something with the captain or assistant captain thing on there. So I do think those are probably the best. But I like the old blacks like Kelly too.
Yay.
I just like all Flyers jerseys, basically. I had a green one as a kid, loved it.
I just I don't like wearing a bright orange anything. It's not a good color for most people to wear.
See, but that's
really not.
Yeah, but that's why it's great. Because
if I can wear a black jersey and still support the team, this is good for me.
Yeah, but that's why it's
great.
I've
got a gray Flyers situation happening right now. Like, let's just go with colors that are good for people's complexions.
The whole point of orange is that it's obnoxious.
Like, yeah.
We're obnoxious. We're Philadelphia. We're Flyers fans. We're obnoxious. So we want to wear obnoxious things because we want to show people how obnoxious we are. That's why it's great.
Yeah. No, the bright neon orange is very fuck you, and that's what I like about it.
I mean, I can't argue with that.
Do
you know how hard it is to find a lipstick that matches with the orange jersey that you're wearing?
You're going to get it for that one.
I am a woman. I wear lipstick. It is difficult to find a lipstick that pairs with an orange jersey. I make it work, but it's difficult.
See, I think like my palette is autumnal tones, so I'm big on the orange.
How did we get here?
I don't know. We're gonna
autumnal tones.
I just love saying autumnal. It's like my favorite word.
Good for you.
All right. So we're gonna shift gears here and do a little bit of ice sport. The ice sport. We're gonna talk about some other teams. We're gonna start just here because I brought up Mike Hoffman. It must have been half an hour ago at this point. But what is up with Mike Hoffman? Like, is it really the behind the scenes stuff that's keeping him from getting signed? Is he just in a flat cap era, like a luxury teams can't afford? Like, you know, JVR got $7 million. Like, is that what he's looking at, like on a 5-year deal? And he's looking for that, and teams are like, yeah, dog, nah, cap didn't go up, ain't happening. Like, is that what's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's primarily the flat cap. I do think the fact that he's bad at defense, or at least I don't even know if he's bad at defense, because he wasn't terrible at defense with Ottawa. I think he just stopped giving a shit about defense. I think that's part of it, but
He went to Florida and stopped caring. That happens to everybody.
I mean, completely fair point, but I do think it's primarily the flat cap. You know, if it wasn't a flat cap, someone would have ponied up and given him, you know, a 4 or 5 year deal worth $5-6 million. I don't doubt that. But, you know, teams' purse strings are tight right now. Either you're slammed up against the cap or you have cap space, but your owner's telling you can't spend it. So it makes it harder. And, you know, a guy like Hoffman, it's funny, you compare him to JVR, and I think there's a lot to that, even though I think JVR is a better player than Mike Hoffman.
Different stylistically.
Well, I think the comparison is that both of those players are kind of luxury players. Like,
yeah.
they're not core players. You don't sign a Mike Hoffman to be one of your core players, and if you do, you're a shitty team. What you do is you sign Mike Hoffman because you want that extra boost. You sign a JVR because you want to have a first-line talent that can play on your third line. That's why you sign a JVR. Mike Hoffman is the same kind of thing. He's a luxury player. You have to shelter him a little bit, but he's going to get his goals. He's going to help you score goals. It's just that in a flat-cap era, I don't know how many teams are willing to spend money on luxury players when they're having enough trouble keeping their actually important players.
Yeah. So in terms of sheltering him, I understand that idea. And he's not going to be a Philadelphia Flyer unless he takes a one-year, $4 million deal. So, like, I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, like, in terms of sheltering him, why not go the other way and say, we have a Couturier and a Lindblom who are themselves shelter. They are their own home. Like, put him there, have him score 40 goals, and, like, those two out there with a good defensive pair, he'll be fine. He'll hide. He'll just hide. Stand near the blue line and fucking cherry pick. We got it.
They are their own home. That just made me really happy. God, yeah. Oscar Lindblom is so good at hockey. Yeah. Jesus.
It's going to be fun, like, seeing him back.
Oscar Lindblom, so a couple of days hockey. Removed from cancer treatments, was making takeaways in the fucking playoffs.
Seriously.
Like, just stunning. Amazing. And his hair is starting to grow back, so he's got that flow going again. Yeah, God, he's just amazing.
I think he should stick with it. I think he should go shaved head and be like, yup, suck it.
I mean, it would be badass, but at the same time, like, when you can have such good hair, I feel like you kind of owe it to all the rest of us that can't to do it.
That's... Like, when you have Oscar Lindblom tier hair, you just, like, it's a gift. It's a gift to humanity.
I feel like I'm like Ben Affleck talking to Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting.
Fuck,
like,
you.
No, you owe it to me.
Yeah. Fuck yourself. This is about me. All of my balding friends, when I cut my hair, were like, it might not come back, bud. Anybody else on the market? Like, there's some guys who just haven't, like, there's... free agency, it's always fast and furious, and then you look around and go, hey, he's not on a team yet. Anybody still in the market, kind of pique your interest, like a Granlin, maybe a Maroon? I still kind of want Chara. I don't care if he's cooked. I just think it would be fun.
Just for the funsies. I was going to ask you when I saw it on the outline, like legitimately why, but I get it.
He's tall.
He is that.
I saw him play with the Kentucky Thoroughblades when I was like 9. I just like him.
I actually didn't realize that Pat Maroon was still out there. I figured by now he would have picked his team and offered to play for them for, you know, league minimum just to win another cup. I take Pat Maroon on a cheap deal in a second.
How?
He's still drunk. Give him time.
Yeah, he's just got like 30 unread texts, like 9 voicemails.
Oh no, yeah, he's still drunk. Bill, Pat Maroon signed with the Lightning. He signed back with them.
He did.
I was gonna say I didn't think he was still out there. I thought I might have missed that, but no, he signed an extension with the Lightning, it appears.
Huh. Well, fuck him.
No, you mentioned Granlin. Granlin's interesting to me, depending on the price. Like,
yeah, he kind of fits, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think. Like, he's the kind of guy where I don't think it's going to fit because I think eventually he's going to get paid. But okay. if he's still hanging around and you can get him on a real cheap deal, then I'd take him in a second because he's a good player. He can play center in a pinch. Like, he's not a center, but he can play it. So you have that option. And he's got familiarity with Fletcher, obviously, from the Minnesota days. He's a pretty good player. Yeah, I mean, if the end of November rolls around and he's still sitting out there and all the spaces are filled and you're like, hey, here's a 1-year, $2 million prove it deal. Like, of course I take him in a second. He's a good player.
Do you think we'll have $2 million left after Phil?
I'm sure they could find a way. I mean, yeah. I you move somebody out, you know, I think they could find a way.
Probably.
Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
Life will out.
So the Colorado Avalanche, who did not win the Stanley Cup, much to my chagrin, they had a pretty decent offseason so far. They got Brandon Saad, they got Devin Taves for seemingly not a ton. Right now, they are the favorite to win the Stanley Cup based on Vegas odds. They're at 750, followed by Vegas, or plus 750. Vegas is at 8-1, Tampa's 9-1. Do you agree with the Avs' status as the favorites at this point in the offseason?
They're real good. I kind of think maybe Vegas on paper. If you're making odds right now, I would go Vegas.
Vegas is good. I really wish. I mean, I know, like, and I'm not like a huge Stars person, but like the Stars run was fun. It was fun to see them kind of, you know, counter expectations and going to run, but I really would have loved to have seen a Vegas Colorado series because that would just have been two juggernauts. And like, I'm not sure which one of those teams is better. And that's the best series to me, where like you go into it and you're like, both these teams are really good. I'm not sure. Like all the other series really this year, you went into it and you're like, I'm pretty sure I know which team is better on paper. So it's just a matter of whether they play up to their potential. Whereas Vegas, Colorado, like maybe Colorado's got the edge now because Colorado's made some ads and they got guys back from injury and whatnot. But like those two teams are pretty damn evenly matched. And I would love to see them battle it out. So I like, Colorado's made some good moves. Getting Brandon Saad, getting Devin Taves, like they're good moves. And they got young guys, you know, Bowen Byram might jump up to the, to the NHL next year. So that only serves to make their defense even better. Presumably their goalies won't be hurt all the time this year or next year. So maybe on paper they look a little bit better, but Vegas is damn good too. So I feel like those two teams on paper should be the ones that are really duking it out for Western Conference supremacy. And maybe next year we'll get to see them in the Western Conference final.
Yeah, and like their odds are 50 cents apart. Like they're basically the same at plus 750 and plus 800. Like they're thought of as the two best teams in the West. Really wanted to see them in the Western Conference final, and then either team against Tampa, I think, would have just given us a better, like, just a more entertaining series. The series was good. It was fine, but I think we all kind of knew where it was going, and Colorado and Vegas, I think, would have put up a little bit more competitively. The Flyers currently have the fifth best odds. It's those three teams, and then Boston, and then Philly. They're ahead of Toronto, St. Louis, and Washington. Seem fair?
I think so. People started to notice the Flyers during the round robin, and I don't think that's going to go away that easily. I think that other people that aren't Flyers fans can see clearly that this is a good hockey team.
Yeah, I kind of had mixed feelings about this because on one hand, I thought it was cool that like people in the national world are acknowledging the Flyers are good. At the same time, I do worry a little bit that they might be getting a little overrated going into next season. At the same time, I'm glad because it maybe served as kind of a wake-up call to the Flyers fans that are screaming that the team actually isn't very good. So it was very mixed feelings. Like, I'm worried that it might be raising expectations too high, but I'm happy that, like, it kind of, you know, right now it seems like all the people that are saying actually the Flyers are good, like, calm down, are getting yelled at by the, like, do something brigade that, like, you're just biased orange tinted glasses Flyers fan idiots and you're okay with mediocrity and all this other bullshit. So it was nice to see someone, you know, a betting type of situation where like those people are meant to be unbiased, that's their entire job, they're trying to make money, that respects the Flyers and thinks the Flyers are actually good, even though they didn't go out and sign Alex Pietrangelo and they didn't immediately replace Matt Niskanen and they haven't traded for Patrick Laine. So that made me happy, but I do wonder if like they might be a little bit overrated by them. I don't know. That's just mixed feelings.
Right now, they're rated as the third best team in the East by betting odds. You know, they're behind Tampa, obviously, behind Boston, and then them. Yeah, I guess we're expecting them to be good. And again, like it all comes down to Carter Hart. If Carter Hart's what we think, then they are really one of those teams. Nothing else really matters. Like, obviously, yeah, scoring some fucking goals would be nice and all that. Like, maybe don't have a power play that scores in one game of the playoffs. that would be cool. But, you know, if Carter Hart's what we think he is, this team is knocking on the door of elite, at least.
God, that power play.
Yeah.
They're not going to fix it, fam.
I think it just has to fix itself. Like,
yes,
Claude Giroux and James Van Riemsdyk have to score on the power play. That's what has to happen.
Fair.
Like, that's,
I forgot how bad it was. You reminded me.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it when I was thinking about Mike Hoffman. But of course, this is the ice sports section, so we move on. The Sabres signed Taylor Hall 1 year, $8 million. Banking on himself, I guess, a little there, trying to get paid a whole bunch. I read in a Wish piece, and again, we love Greg Wyshynski. I'm not shitting on him, of course, but I read, the Sabres are relevant now. To which I replied, are they, though? They also traded for almost 36-year-old Eric Staal and bolstered their depth with a couple of signings. Are the Sabres relevant, or are they just not terrible?
I mean, we don't even know yet.
Yeah.
We gotta see how they play. Like, they could sign good players and still suck. Ask the Devils.
Like, Taylor Hall isn't exactly, like, he had an MVP season.
He
like,
didn't, though.
His regular season doesn't make you a winner. Like, what he does typically, you're not a winning team because of that.
So the point I'll make about the Buffalo Sabres, and to be clear, like, I really like what they did with the Taylor Hall signing. I love the Eric Staal trade.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Sabres will not be a relevant team beyond maybe if everything breaks their way, sneaking in as like the final wild card, until they stop deluding themselves into thinking that Rasmus Ristolainen is the number one defenseman. Like that, mm-hmm. that's their biggest thing. Like, it's not even just that they have him on a bad contract, which they do. It's that, like, they insist on giving him 24 minutes a night when he's actively bad. Like, that is going to single-handedly torpedo your team when you think that an actually bad player isn't just not bad, but you think he's actually really good.
Is Dave Haxtell their coach?
Presumably, eventually, it's going to be Rasmus Dahlin who's going to take that job. But until he does, and until they acknowledge that Ristolainen is bad and use him, either get rid of him or use him as the number five defenseman that he should be used as, they're not going to be good, because you can't have an actually bad number one defenseman and be good.
Probably not. You know, it would be tough to overcome that, I would think. For half the game at one of the most important positions, we have a bad player. Like, yeah, that seems less than ideal.
It's a bold strategy.
Fucking Buffalo. And they couldn't even cover against Kansas City this week. Like, fuck them. Fuck the Pagulas, all right?
And fuck Buffalo.
Yeah. So here's the Kelly and Steph segment.
Kelly, you're the only person that likes Buffalo in the entire world.
Here's the Kelly and Steph segment, though.
Oh.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Jumbo, baby.
They went Jumbo Joe.
The Leafs.
The Leafs.
The Leafs.
They'll be the Leafs when they win a fucking playoff series. How about that? Like, who was the player whose name I couldn't say?
Dale Weiss.
Yeah, Dale Weiss. He'll be Dale Weiss when he scores a fucking goal.
Whose name couldn't you say?
I was going to say, which one?
How long of a list are we working with?
The
here?
One I always got wrong. Yeah, Dale Weiss. He'll be Weiss when he scores a fucking goal. So the Leafs went out and get Joe Thornton. They get Wayne Simmonds, so they'll be, you know, harder to play against. They get TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian to replace Tyson Barry and Cody Ceci. That seems pretty good.
Mm.
Are they, like, actually ready to take the next step? Do you see it? Kelly and Steph, the floor is yours.
I don't know.
I'm dealing with men don't believe that women belong in sports, so I've got a lot of other stuff going on. I think that they are
strong endorsement.
With a question mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a question mark at the end.
I think they have the same problem that the Flyers have, in that they have good players that don't play well, and they need the good players to do good things. Mitch Marner specifically needs to be better.
Austin Matthews, too.
Yeah, like, looking at that team on paper, they should be able to win a lot of hockey games, and for some reason they don't, and it's because the guys aren't performing as well as they should, and that's a them problem. Like, they need to be better.
I also don't think that Frederik Andersen is a good goalie. I think he's
fine.
A fine goalie.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
he had a
fine.
Real bad year last
good.
Year. I think that's the big thing for them, for me, next year, is that if Frederik Andersen plays well, they should be fine. Because that was their big problem. Like, their two big problems last year were, for the first 2 months of the year, the team was a mess for a lot of reasons, but a lot of it was because Mike Babcock wasn't doing a good job coaching them. So then they fired him. And then Sheldon Keefe came in, and the team got better. It was just that the goaltending wasn't good. So, like, the underlying performance got better, but the goaltending didn't support them, so they stayed mediocre. And, like, I wasn't high on them last year because I was like, at some point you just have to assume that, like, a team is who they say they are, and who the Maple Leafs say they are is a mediocre at best team that doesn't play up to their talent. That was true last year. I don't think that's necessarily true next year. They still have a lot of talent. And if Frederik Andersen goes back to being a good goalie, like last year he was a bad goalie. If he goes back to being a good goalie, not a great goalie, just a good goalie, then the Leafs should be one of the best teams in the East. And they still have great high-end talent. I did like the TJ Brody signing for them a lot. I think that stabilizes their defense. So they should be good. It's just, is Frederik Andersen able to bounce back, or is he just bad now? I guess we'll see.
I know it's ice sport, but goddamn do I wish the Flyers would have brought in Joe Thornton on a one-year contract.
Is that because of the four-goal situation?
I would say that's like third on the list. I think they, like, imagine having Joe Thornton as your, I don't know, your 3 or 4 C. He's still good. Like, he's old, but he's still good. If you're not giving him a ton of minutes, I think he's a pretty effective player.
Didn't he want to go to Toronto because of his family? I think it's his, like, family lived there or something. So this wasn't like, why didn't the Flyers get Joe Thornton? Like, he was only going to go to Toronto, right?
Yeah, that's just me whining about them not getting Joe Thornton. That's not like the Flyers should have done. Like, they couldn't have. But I'm whining because I wanted them to.
I will say, like, on the surface, I like their moves. And, like, the last 2 years, I've thought, like, they're too young. I know bringing in Tavares, like, changed their timeline from a developing team to a, no, we're super skilled and we're going to win it this way and we're going to win it this way now. But, like, I just thought the core of your team is too young to be able to do these things right now. Bringing in Thornton, bringing in Simmons, Brody and Bogosian are both 30. I think it helps them take that next step maturity-wise and readiness-wise, and obviously the players they have will be older because that's how time works. But I just kind of think... Yeah. I just kind of think it's funny that, like, Joe Thornton is brought in for veteran leadership and playoff experience. He's had the C stripped off of him, and he's, like, the face of the chokers. You know? Wayne Simmons... I like Joe Thornton. I just think it's funny. Like, narratively, it's funny. Like, Wayne Simmons, yeah, that would have been nice 4 years ago, huh? Like, we're tougher to play against now, though. He'll score 5 goals, but he might get in 5 fights, too. Like, I just think it's kind of funny. But I like the moves on the surface.
To be fair, I was just going to say that, like, Simmons and Thornton are, like, kind of the platonic ideal locker room leader type guys. And when you have a bunch of, like, flashy, cocky, I play in Toronto, I'm a hockey player, and my shit doesn't stink players in your locker room, maybe it's good to have two guys who are at the tail end of their career, but they will whip you into shape in the locker room because they're not going to put up with your bullshit. Like, maybe that's good.
No, I agree with that. I think that, you know, obviously intangibles are intangible. You can't measure them, but I think there's probably some truth to the fact that, you know, Toronto could benefit from guys who enter that locker room and immediately have clout. You know, immediately come in with the ability to just basically be like, get your shit together. And Wayne Simmons is more than willing to say that. I mean, that was his role in Philly, was to be the bad cop to Claude Giroux's good cop. And Joe Thornton's been through pretty much everything. I mean, aside from winning a cup, he's pretty much been through everything in the NHL. He's a future Hall of Famer. And every player in that locker room, if they have any sense of self-awareness whatsoever, is going to respect him off the bat because he's Joe Thornton. So I think that's important. One thing I did want to say, though, because Bill was talking about funny things. You know what I still find really funny? And this is part of the reason why I think the TJ Brody signing is going to be so good for them, is the fact that, and, like, I get it that they were trying to get out from under a bad deal and whatnot, but Toronto was cap strapped last year. They had no space to do anything. And they had Cody Ceci on a $4.5 million cap hit all season. Like, they chose to have Cody Ceci on that much money, an actively bad player, when they had no cap space. Like, it just that boggles my mind that a team that is otherwise smart did not just not qualify. Like, they traded him for Zaitsev, and, like, I don't know why they didn't just not qualify the guy. Like, just get rid of him. Just get rid of him. Just be like, bye. Okay, we traded Zaitsev for nothing. It's fine. We'd rather have actually good players playing than light $4.5 million on fire of our cap and actively dress a bad player in our top four. That was mind-boggling to me. It still is.
Cody Ceci.
Say it,
like,
Steph.
Cock-a-pee-pee.
Come on.
Okay,
there you go. Thank you, Kelly.
You're welcome.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. I just want to add, like, any other teams or players or moves or whatever stand out to you, and why is it Mike Smith back to Edmonton?
Oh, I just think, like, what the Penguins and the Rangers are doing just makes me laugh a lot, and thank you for just being idiots. God, I love you guys for being just the dumbest shit-run organizations.
See, the thing with the Rangers that pisses me off, like, the Penguins just make me laugh now because Rutherford is just making dumb decision after dumb decision after dumb decision, and he's probably flushing the last few really good years of Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin down the toilet.
That's a shame.
And, and I love it.
I love it. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, honestly, you hate to see it. But the thing with the Rangers that pisses me off is that, like, they do dumb things, and then they get bailed out because they keep winning fucking lotteries.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Their rebuild should not work. The only reason why it's worked is because they've won two lotteries, and then two players really wanted to play in New York, Adam Fox and Artemi Panarin. That's it. They got lucky. Their rebuild would have been a disaster if they wouldn't have gotten lucky.
And Stanley Cup champion Kevin Shattenkirk.
Oh, fucking Shattenkirk.
Which they screwed up.
I know.
Right?
Like, do they know that New York smells bad and that the Rangers play in a train station?
I don't know. I think we should tell them a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
People do forget that.
All right. Do we have anything else? Anything anyone wants to say?
I'm really sad that we didn't get our draft party this year.
I am too.
I'm really sad about it.
When this is over, we're going to have to throw, like, the biggest party ever.
The biggest
get ready
party. Yeah, so you can't come in unless you're vaccinated against the Rona, but...
Yeah, you're going to have to bring your papers.
Bring your papers.
Oh, God.
It's just going to... Like, it's just been a tough year, and the fact that we couldn't have the draft party just made it, like, that much worse, and I miss seeing all of your faces, so... We'll get all together. Those are words. We'll get everyone together when we can.
Yeah, on draft night, like, I was sitting there. I just got home from work. I'm chilling, and I'm like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. Mm-hmm.
Getting tanked it by sucks. Myself, while enjoyable, not as fun.
Yeah.
All right, that is all the time we have for you on BSH Radio this week. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for hanging out. I want to give a special shout out to Doc Emrick on his retirement. I love you, Doc. I don't care what anyone says for my money. You're my all-time favorite hockey announcer. That's it. My name's Bill Matz. For Kelly, for Charlie, for Steph, have a great week, everybody.
Are you ready to talk about sports?